Smoke Jensen's confidence continued into late afternoon. Then, before he knew what to expect, five men appeared on the trail ahead of him. They reined in momentarily, then came on at a gallop, weapons out and ready. Tommy Olsen understood it all in a flash.
They're back!
In a storm, the outlaws rushed beyond those in the lead of the herd. Smoke Jensen shot one out of the saddle, and then the horses stampeded. The gunfire drove the panicked horse back on those behind. 11 men streamed over the ridge in pursuit of the unsettled remounts. Most of them fired in the air, though a few directed bullets toward the hard-working drovers. One of the leaning tree hands threw up his arms and wavered in the saddle. Smoke Jensen swung in his saddle and fired directly at the shooter. He flew from the saddle and disappeared under the hooves of the shrill and stamping remounts. A bullet cracked past Jensen's ear, and he looked to see that the five riders who had attacked from the front now seriously worked at killing every one of his hands, himself as well. Reno Jim Urien and the four men with him halted the edge of the boiling mass of horses and took careful aim at the men who attempted to control them. Another leaning tree man slumped down on the neck of his horse. A bullet cut through the jacket worn by Smoke Jensen and burned a hot line across his shoulder. There would be no containing the horses. Smoke knew it at once. Already the outlaws pushed him down the trail in the direction from which they had come. Clouds of dust and powder smoke whirled upward, cut off clear vision of the violent confrontation. Heat became oppressive. Sweat ran down Smoke Jensen's forehead and stung his eyes. He wiped with a forearm to clear him. Suddenly, an outlaw loomed directly in front of him. Smoke saw the muzzle rise to center on his chest. Then he triggered his Colt.
Gah!
The back of Brian Gephardt's head flew off with his hat. But a Smith American discharged, and a shower of stars exploded inside Smoke's head. Immense pain shot down Smoke's neck. He felt himself slipping from the saddle. Swiftly, blackness overwhelmed. Caleb Noonan found himself facing three determined rustlers. He knew the horses had to be controlled, yet the threat to his life forced him to draw. His shot went wild and he recocked his Colt. Another outlaw took a shot at Caleb.
Ah! Ow, my leg!
An aching line of fire ran along the outer side of Caleb's right thigh. Then, his mouth surged into a frenzied leap as the slug burned into its belly. Caleb shot again and put a bullet into the meaty part of one outlaw's abdomen. Then a giant pain exploded in Caleb's chest. All strength left him, and his horse threw him. He landed hard enough to cross his eyes. When he straightened them, he looked up into the muzzle of a .44 Winchester pointed at his head. Pulling out of the swirl of combat, Ahab Trask decided that these rustlers were seriously trying to kill him all. It hadn't been that way the first time. He tried to rally his muddled thoughts and make sense of what he saw. There seemed to be gunmen everywhere. Worse, they fired with deadly accuracy. Another of the leaning tree hands went to the ground, his chest bloody from a shot in the back. Ahab Trask took the time he spent in observation to reload his six-gun. Such short ranges, it would serve well. Two rustlers charged straight at him. Then the remount surged all around him. To his horror, his horse reared and spun on its hind hooves. Trask felt himself slipping, and then a rifle butt drove out of seemingly nowhere and slammed into his chest. The remount passed on and left behind a lifeless ball of torn, bloody clothes. Bits of bone protruding from rents and cloth. A wicked smile playing on his lips, Reno Jim Urien thought the whole plan had gone very well. At the outset, not all the men knew of his plan to kill everyone and leave no witnesses, or the chance of pursuit. Only those who rode with him and those he placed on the left flank had been aware of that. He allowed himself a moment to gloat as those flankers crashed into the Millen defenders. Two more drovers went down. One fell under the hooves of the remounts. Oh yeah, well before sundown, they would have the herd back together and under their control. Yancey Osborne rode out of the melee to join Reno Jim.
They fight like wildcats, Reno. Everything's so mixed up, we're shooting more air than men.
So are they, remember?
I don't see anything of Smoke Jensen.
I think I saw him go down early on, Reno.
Well, damn! I wanted him for myself.
Anyway, he won't be a bother to us anymore. You have any spare cartridges?
In my left saddlebag. Take a box.
If 20 rounds don't finish it, I'll eat my six gun.
Yancey reached for the ammunition and returned to the fight.
Give him hell, Yancey!
Back in the midst of the fray, Harper Liddy was having a hard time keeping his mount between his legs. Gunshots cracked all around him. Old Reb, his trusty mount, constantly twitched his loose hide and made mincing sidesteps to express his discomfort. Everything was in such confusion. He couldn't prove it, but a moment ago, it seemed as though the horses that had been driven off from the herd had started to return. How could that be? He had no time to speculate further. A rustler burst out of the miasma of dust and smoke and charged right at him. The hard case had a revolver blazing in each hand. To Liddy's good fortune, the outlaw turned out to be a lousy shot. A galloping horse provided a poor platform for which to fire a gun. Harper Liddy took careful aim. Another wiser gun hand shot Harper Liddy from a standing horse. The bullet cut through Liddy's chest from front to rear. Bad hurt, and knowing it, Harper fired point blank at the charging outlaw. Harper Liddy fell dead at the feet of his mount. Intent on protecting the Olsons, Jerry Harkness fought his way from behind the rustlers toward the wagon. He and the five men he had brought along arrived only seconds before the attack. Two of the men died in the effort to penetrate the gang. Jerry had taken another grazing wound. Now he dismounted and crouched beside the frightened family. From above him, a Winchester cracked, followed by a shot from a lighter weapon, a Marlin, Jerry thought. He added his own firepower to it and saw immediate results. A surging roan went right down in front of him, yanked from its front hooves by its dying rider. Jerry cycled the lever action of his .44 Winchester and fired at another outlaw.
These bastards don't care about the horses. They're more interested in killing us.
He centered on another bandit and squeezed the trigger. Two hard cases swept past him. Jerry took aim. One gunman fell. The other turned back and pointed his six gun at the occupants of the wagon. Too late to take aim, Jerry thrust himself upward, arms out to deflect the revolver. He got his hand on the barrel and succeeded in his purpose of protecting the wagon, but not himself. The shot bore through his chest and burst his heart. Head throbbing, Smoke Jensen regained consciousness to find an eerie silence blanket in the battlefield. Had the horses been taken and the gang gone from there? Slowly, he roused himself, conscious of a steady seep of blood down the side of his head. He figured at least it was the side and not his forehead. Slowly, Smoke gained control over the focus of his eyes. He saw a number of the outlaws sitting their horses and staring in horror off across the plain. What were they looking at? Smoke raised himself farther. When his gaze moved to the ridge surrounding him, his features mirrored the same shock as that on the faces of the outlaws. He blinked, and then slowly, painfully, came to his boots. He could hardly believe what he saw. Ringing the entire swale, a double circle of Cheyenne warriors sat their ponies. They looked down in silence while the dust and powder smoke drifted from the scene of conflict. The horses driven off earlier milled in front of those on the south side. While Smoke Jensen looked on in astonishment, Ironclaw raised his rifle, and the engines began a silent, baleful advance down into the shallow basin. Only Smoke knew that the Cheyenne were friendly. That resulted in utter chaos among the outlaws. Only escape filled their minds. The herd meant nothing now. Half a dozen took off to the north to meet a wall of bullets and arrows.
Band together, boys! We'll shoot our way out! Now!
Reno Jim pointed the nose of his horse to the west and waited while the gang assembled behind him. When they had, with Utah Jack at his side, Reno Jim opened fire on the Cheyenne and spurred his horse. 23 hard cases began that fateful charge. Three got knocked from their saddles before they had covered 50 feet. The gang reached full gallop halfway across the slowly contracting ring of engines. Abruptly, Reno Jim and Utah Jack reined in and let the others rush past them. As a result, the surviving outlaws took the brunt of the Cheyenne response. Firing blindly at the engines, the desperate hard cases crashed into the approaching ranks on a broad front. Rifles and revolvers fired in a regular volley that opened a narrow path through the Cheyenne ponies. Fighting at point-blank range now, the Urian gang surged into the open. More of the engines moved to close the gap. Before they could, Reno Jim spoke sharply to Utah Jack. Now! They bolted forward and bowled their way through the rest of the gang, who struggled hand-to-hand now with the Cheyenne. Slowed to a walk, Reno Jim and Utah Jack shot two ponies out from under the last engine, blocking their escape. As the riders fell, the two white men spurred their mounts and broke into the open. They wasted no time. Turned to the south, Reno Jim Urian leaned low over the neck of his horse and kept up a steady pricking with his big Mexican star round. Back inside the contracting ring of warriors, Ironclaw started to call out for pursuit.
No! Those two are mine.
Ironclaw nodded his understanding.
Go with good medicine, Smokejack.
I reckon I'll be needing some of that.
So saying, Smoke swung into Cougar's saddle and started south after the outlaw leader and the trail. The exertion of keeping in the saddle at a full gallop made his head spin again, and black spots rose before his eyes. Smoke had hastily tied a bandana around his scalp braze to stop the bleed. For that, he was thankful. Now all he had to do was catch up to his quarry. Smoke ran Cougar about a mile, but then slowed to a fast trot. It would be too easy to wind his mount and end up afoot. Considering the behavior of the fugitives, they might not take that factor into account, Smoke speculated. Ahead, he could see the rise and dust of their passage. With any luck, their horses would wear down soon and he could catch up. Only gradually did the realization of the effect of the attack register on him. Too many good men had died back there. Jerry Harkness, Harper Liddy, Ahab Trask, Granger Bolt, Caleb Noonan, and all those who had offered their help. The two he chased had a hell of a lot to account for, and Smoke reckoned to be the one to make them pay. For a moment, he felt an ache deep inside. It would grow, he knew, into an overwhelming sense of defeat if he let it. No way would he do that, Smoke promised himself. He would track this pair to China and back if necessary. He looked forward to watching them hang. Inexorably, Smoke Jensen traced the fleeing men across the high plains. Slowly, he closed the gap. When he finally caught a sight of them, Grubbs and Urian walked their horses out of necessity. Even at that far distance, Smoke could see the flanks of the animals heaving. White lather lay in rolls along their necks and around saddle blankets.
Fools.
They'd gotten their horses completely blown. All the better for him. He gave Cougar a light tap of his round knob, cavalry-style spurs. In no time, he closed the space between them to less than a quarter mile. Then, abruptly and unexpectedly, the numbing pain returned to throb and gouge through Smoke's head. He swayed drunkenly in the saddle. His vision blurred, the world spun around him. A sudden spasm of nausea twisted his gut. His hand trembled as he reached for his canteen to rinse his mouth. Another shaft of blinding agony pierced his head. Smoke felt his balance slipping away. Darkness washed over him. He pitched out of the saddle. Up ahead, Reno Jim Urian and Utah Jack Grubbs watched in silence while Smoke Jensen fell to the ground. Grubbs pointed to the prone figure.
I'll go back and finish him off, boss.
Yes, I suppose that's the best way. I wouldn't get any satisfaction out of killing a helpless man.
Nor will I. How the hell did those Indians get mixed up in all this?
Probably had their eyes on the herd.
From what I saw at the end, they didn't hum a hair on Smoke Jensen. In fact, their chief rode right up to him, and they talked real friendly-like.
I saw that. damn savages must be friends of his.
That'll make doing for him easier.
I'll meet you in Sheridan.
Utah Jack nodded in reply and set off on foot back towards Smoke Jensen. Reno Jim continued on south, leading his winded mount by the reins. He had lost the horses. Worse, his men had been slaughtered by the damn Cheyenne. Only 6 men were left back in Bent Rock Canyon with the cattle.
How can I recover what I've lost? What kind of leader lets his men get trapped like I did?
Smoke lay still. He slowly opened his eyes and fought to focus.
Whoa there! Easy, easy.
Smoke took the opportunity to raise his head and verify his suspicion. Though his head throbbed monstrously, he focused on the boots and rawhide chap-covered legs of Utah Jack Grubbs. Smoke looked higher. Grubbs was turned away from him, his arms up to calm his nervous mount.
Down, boy! Down!
His attention completely off the man he came to kill, Utah Jack saw it at the reins. His sorrel gelding had been frightened by the Palouse stallion, and he had all he could do to regain control. As a result, he failed to see Smoke Jensen thrust himself to a sitting position. Another wave of dizziness swamped Smoke, and he had to sit a moment until it passed. Then, Smoke reached out and gripped the right stirrup. Slowly, he dragged himself upright. Another black pool of dizziness engulfed him. His vision cleared almost at once this time. He glanced down and silently swore. Both of his Colts had fallen from the holsters and lay on the ground 10 feet from him. He had run out of ammunition for his Winchester and left it behind. Then, his left hand brushed the haft of a tomahawk he habitually carried on his saddle. Slowly, he eased it out of the thong that retained it. In the next second, Utah Jack settled his irritable horse. He turned again to face Smoke Jensen.
So, you old bastard, you're on your feet. Too bad you lost your irons. Without them, you're nothing. In fact, this is gonna be so easy, I think I'll do it with my bare hands.
When pigs fly and cows sing.
You got a smart mouth, Jensen. If it wasn't for the prospect of getting that herd of yours, I would have driven you into the ground like a fence post the first day on that stinking ranch of yours.
Time. Smoke needed every bit of it he could buy to get back even a little of his strength. To do so, he decided to bait Grubbs.
And how are you gonna do that, you mouthy little pile of horse crap? You gonna beat me to death with your tongue?
You'll find out in about a second. First, I'm gonna have my say. You're pathetic, Jensen. All that lovey-dovey stuff with that wife of yours, asking her opinion of every little thing, it made me sick. And a real man knows a woman ain't got no brains. You have to yell at him all the time and beat her at least once a month to keep her in line. And another thing, you never lay a hand on that toe-headed brat. Ain't a kid that grows up right lest he gets whipped regular every day.
Smoke used all his willpower to hold his anger in check. He put a twisted smile on his face.
You're such a prime example of that.
Damn right I am! My pa beat my butt at least once a week. Took a belt to me every day. What really galls me is that you don't know anything about handling livestock. Horses has got to be whipped broke to properly tame them. Any fool knows that.
Yeah, any fool. Are you through running that open sewer of yours?
Damn right.
Come on, Grubbs. Get right up close. I'm gonna enjoy tearing you a new asshole.
Utah Jack took 2 fast steps to close the distance, and he swung a slow looping right. The moment he did, Smoke Jensen eased away from the support of Cougar and brought the tomahawk into sight. The keen edge of the blade sank into the arm of his opponent, an inch above the elbow. Grubbs backed off a few paces and fumbled the bandana from around his neck. Clumsily, he used it to bind his wound. Smoke came on. His arm useless now. Utah Jack could not draw a 6 gun. Smoke closed with hot blood dripping from the edge of his tomahawk.
You're fast for an old fart.
Not so all by half, you traitorous dog.
Smoke felt new strength surging through his body. It lifted him. He reached Grubbs and pounded him in the chest with a hard right. The menace of the tomahawk remained cocked and ready. Smoke's right lashed out again. Grubbs' eyes crossed, and he momentarily lost sight in the left one. Mopping at it with his left hand, he tried to block the next blow. His effort failed, and his lower lip split in a searing flash of pain. Utah Jack tried to dodge to his right, felt the fiery bite of the hawk against his ribs. Doubled over, Utah Jack's vision cleared, and he grasped feebly at the hilt of the knife in the top of his boot. He came upright as far as he could and drove the blade with lightning speed toward the exposed loin of Smoke Jensen. Cold steel skidded across Smoke's cartridge belt and punched into his side. Smoke fell away from his attacker. He landed on the ground and rolled towards his six guns. Utah Jack advanced on him. Smoke's hand closed over the butt grip of 145 Colt, and he whipped it upward.
No!
Grubbs fell dead as weakness washed over Smoke Jensen. He had to get the stab wound cared for, and now, from the feel of it, the blade had missed his liver. How, he didn't know, but his gratitude to his maker was genuine. Carefully, Smoke dropped his tomahawk and tugged his shirt from behind his belt. New pain radiated through his torso as he pulled it higher. Another whirl of dizziness staggered him. He looked down, expecting to see the worst. He saw instead a small 2-inch incision. A thin ribbon of blood trickled over the bluish lips. Gently, he probed the pale flesh surrounding it. Head still aching at each step, Smoke returned to his horse. From a saddlebag, he took some of the remaining moss that had been collected a week ago for the drawing poultice Smoke had used on Jerry Harkness. He wet it from his canteen, packed it in the wound, and retrieved a length of buckskin strip from the bag. That he wound around his body and tied tightly. Then he washed the bullet gouge on his head again and rebandaged it. Hobbling away from Cougar, he stripped the weapons from the corpse of Utah Jack. Smoke found the cartridge belt and revolver empty, and five rounds in the Winchester. He gathered up his second Colt and replaced the expended cartridge in the right-hand one. He didn't have the strength to throw the outlaw over his saddle, but he would not leave the horse out there to fend for itself. He led it back to where Cougar waited, mounted gingerly, and put the Palouse in motion. With one rein around the pommel of Smoke's saddle, the sorrel trotted along peacefully beside Cougar. Despite his recent head wound and the new cut in his side, Smoke began to feel stronger with each passing mile. He picked up the trail of Reno Jim Urien readily and followed along at a fast trot. He had little doubt that Urien intended to pass through Sheridan. Smoke wanted to catch him before then. Any hotel room or saloon front could become an excellent ambush spot. In a thoughtful mood, Smoke reached under the skirt of his saddle and extracted a softened piece of bison jerky. He had obtained the dried meat from Iron Claw before setting out after the fleeing outlaws.
It will be good for your head.
I doubt I'll need 6 strips.
Eat them all, then we get some hump meat. It will make you strong.
Smoke accepted this. He often recalled the story of the Kiowa war chief, Two Moons, who as a young man was reported to have taken 36 rifle and revolver wounds in one fierce battle with the cavalry from Fort Sill. He often recalled the story of the Kiowa war chief Two Moons. As a young man, it was reported that he had taken 36 rifle and revolver wounds in one fierce battle with the cavalry from Fort Sill. At least two of them had struck him in the groin. Now the Kiowa subsisted almost entirely on bison. And not only did Two Moon heal up, but he sired 7 children and died at the age of 83. That was enough to convince Smoke. There'd be bison at the Crow Agency. He would get his hump meat. Smoke bit at his lower lip to snap his focus back on what he had started out to do. His keen eyes fixed on the spot where Urien had remounted. The depth of the hoof prints increased, and the space between them elongated. This time, the rider kept to a trot. His Despite the throbbing in his head, Smoke urged Cougar into a canter. A mile farther, the tracks veered from the trail. Smoke looked back. He could not see the place where he had fought with Utah Jack now. Reining Cougar to the left, he followed Reno Jim's sign. Muted and made flat by distance, Reno Jim Urien had heard the single shot. He knew it had to have been fired by Smoke Jensen. Utah Jack would have pumped at least 3 slugs as insurance into so famous a gunfighter as Smoke Jensen. Accordingly, he left the trail to Sheridan and broke a new path cross-country. He knew that Jensen would be coming after him. Deliberately, he did not make any effort to cover his tracks. He had a definite plan. Reno Jim fixed his eyes on a distant line of trees that denoted a stream bed. There, he would find what he wanted. And when Reno Jim located it, he smiled a mean, thin-lipped smile. Perfect for what he had in mind. A deep, wide, twisting ravine ran perpendicular to the creek. Cut into the prairie by ages of runoff, it had grown to a depth he gauged to be 15 or more feet. Quickly, he backtracked to where he could negotiate the slope and side. Then he dismounted and led his horse down into the gully. He found the winding course to be ideal. It offered several places for a man to hide and wait. Reno Jim picked his ambush site very carefully. A limestone outcropping created a wide, gentle bend, and beyond it, a granite shelf forced a sharp turn into the dry waterway. The outlaw leader took his mount well beyond this and screwed a ground anchor in. He tied the reins to this, pulled free his Winchester, and returned to the angled curve. Then he settled in to wait. There were trees ahead, Smoke noted as he dogged the tracks left by Reno Jim Urien. It would be the creek where they had camped 2 nights before. The place where the Cheyenne had tried to take the herd would likely be a couple of miles south of that. The irony was not missed by Smoke. Abruptly, he made note of an overlay of tracks, one set returning across those that led to the distant creek. A small alarm began to tingle in the back of his mind. If Reno Jim wanted to backtrack himself, he surely knew enough not to do it on his fresh trail. Not unless he wanted it noticed. Now, why would that be? Smoke looked around, farther from the sign he followed. There, the return tracks cut away at a right angle from the trail he followed. Then Smoke saw the broken ground at the lip of the ravine where Reno Jim had descended.
So, that's it. He wants to lead me into an ambush. Well, might as well oblige the wily jackal.
Smoke dismounted and tied Utah Jack's horse to a hawthorn bush. That accomplished, he returned to Cougar and headed the animal down into the fissure. Immediately, Smoke took in the nature of his new surroundings. Fine sand and small pebbles formed the bed of the cleft, its course a series of turns and bends. It had been carved out over what must have been centuries as water ran toward the creek. He judged himself to be close to 18 feet below the level of the prairie. Reno Jim had left clear impressions of his boots as well as the hooves of his mount. If the man wanted to hide his whereabouts, he would have come back and wiped out those telltale signs. For all the harm done him today, Smoke could still smell an ambush in the making without any effort at all. He chose to remain mounted, walking Cougar along slowly. He kept alert, his eyes moving constantly to detect any change in surroundings or the glint of sunlight off a gun barrel. Man and horse rounded one twist in the defile and progressed along a relatively long straightaway. Another bend, wider than the previous one, waited beyond. For all his caution, it wasn't Smoke, but Cougar who gave the first alarm. Cougar halted abruptly near the center of the curve. Immediately, he felt the sting of shards on his face, from limestone blasted loose by a bullet impact 6 inches from his head. The slug had struck the rock at the exact point where Smoke's head would have been, had his horse not pulled up so short. At once, Smoke jumped the Palouse stallion to the left, behind the shelter of the rounded wall of the gorge. Quickly, Smoke dismounted and slid his rifle from its scabbard. He cycled the lever action and chambered around. Then he eased the barrel out in the open. He sighted at the spot from where the smoke had come.
Oh, I'm gonna get you, Jensen, you rotten bastard!
Plenty have tried!
What did you do to Utah Jack?
I shot him! Left the carcass for the coyotes!
I suppose I shouldn't be surprised.
You're wrong, Reno. Like you were wrong about taking my herd. If he hadn't stabbed me in the side, I could have put him on his horse and brought him along.
A long silence followed that revelation. Smoke Jensen strained to hear any sound of movement. After the earlier exchange, he knew he only had two rounds left for the .44 Winchester and a cylinder load in each of his .45 Colts. He reckoned Reno Jim to be no better off than he. Funny, the sound had come from farther down the water course. Smoke took quick aim. Smoke dared to dash to the sharper bend. He reached it without drawing fire. So far, so good. One round left in the Winchester. He grasped it by the receiver and let it hang from his left arm. Six gun drawn, Smoke rounded the acute angle. Found the ambusher's vantage point vacant. It was gonna have to be the hard way. Making the best time he could, Smoke sprinted back to Cooper and put away his rifle. Then he led the animal back toward where Reno Jim had disappeared. Standing beside his horse, Reno Jim Urien stared with disbelief at the empty saddlebag that left him with only the ammunition in his Smith Americans, a dozen rounds. He turned at the sound and drew with smooth speed. His bullet struck nothing. Reno Jim moved away from his mount. That slug struck the rock ledge above Smoke Jensen's head. Deformed by the impact, it moaned off harmlessly. That bullet was so close, Reno could feel the heat. Slowly, the realization came to him that he had two choices. He could stay here and trade shots until they both ran dry, or he could head for the creek and attempt to escape pursuit. The latter course sounded best, except that the only way to ensure success would be to make certain Smoke Jensen lay dead in this gully. He would have to outweigh Jensen. Time slowed down. It appeared to Reno Jim that hours dragged past before he sensed movement again.
God damn you, Smoke Jensen! Show yourself and fight like a man! Oh,
oh. Show yourself, Reno, and fight like a man!
For a long, sweaty hour, Smoke continued to toy with Reno Jim. He changed positions and used his ammunition sparingly. To keep the pressure on, he had to expend part of his dwindling supply. His strength increased steadily while he watched his enemy unravel. Suddenly, Urien appeared in the open. His face slack, his eyes wild.
Jensen, can we talk?
I'm listening.
Can we work this out? I can tell you where the cattle the gang rustled are located. And I can tell you something else, too. Real important.
What's that?
I have a partner, a very influential man, a regular pillar of the community.
What do you expect in return for this?
I want to live. I don't want to be shot down in this miserable wilderness, and I don't want to hang. I want to work a deal. Maybe a few years in prison in exchange for my information.
I'll promise you this for now. You be straight with me, and I won't kill you.
Remember this. I want to come out of this alive.
Tell me what you have and we'll see.
Well, that's all I get.
For now, give.
All right, all right. The cattle are in Bentrock Canyon, down near the Muddy Creek. There are six men watching them.
And this partner of yours?
I really get to live?
I gave my word I'll not kill you.
No, all right, all right. You won't believe this, but I swear it's true. He's born Kelso. Cattle broker in Muddy Gap, a deacon in his church of all things.
Tell me that again.
My partner is born Kelso. He has been for the past 6 years.
All right. Throw out all your weapons. Do it now.
Two nickel-plated Smith & Wesson Americans landed out on the sand. A 41 rimfire Derringer followed, then a knife. Then, Smoke Jensen came from his own cover and walked up to the gang leader.
I didn't say anything about not hitting you.
Tommy Olsen and Ironclaw followed the tracks left by Smoke Jensen. The war chief studied the horizon after 3 hours at a moderate trot. He nodded and pointed with his chin.
Up ahead, it is our friend Smoke Jensen.
Gosh, you can see that far?
I used to be able to see farther. The eyes get weaker with age.
We gotta hurry.
We will get there faster if we do not run the horses.
Oh, yeah, Smoke said something like that too.
He learned well from White Wolf.
Who?
The man your people call Preacher.
Less than 100 yards separated them now, and yet Smoke came on at the same pace.
He is leading 2 horses.
I can see that. One has a tied-up man on it. The other has one across the saddle.
That one is dead, I think.
Smoke waved and finally increased his gait.
I've got Reno Jim Urien. Jack Grubbs is dead. And I have unfinished business in Muddy Gap.
What kind of business?
I think we might get back your cattle, Tommy. Among other things. First, though, we have to get those horses to Fort Custer.
Before that, you have to have those wounds treated. And we have a feast.
Upon the return of Smoke and the others, 6 of the warriors became hunters. They rode off from the herd in search of bison, while Smoke supervised the burial of the dead. A surprise had awaited Smoke in the form of Luke and 5 volunteers, all deputized by the sheriff in Sheridan.
I thought you'd be strapped down in a hospital bed.
Ain't a doctor born who could put me down a minute longer than I want to be, especially when my friends are in trouble. Smoke, I'm right sorry not to have gotten here sooner. Could have swung the balance.
I'm not sure, Luke. There were near to 40 outlaws before the Cheyenne got here and took a hand. But then it was too late for most of us. The Olsons and I survived only because of Ironclaw.
Well, then, I'll not belabor the point. I still feel bad about it. What really hurts is losing Jerry. He was a friend.
Fine horse handler. We'll all miss him.
Smoke Jensen turned away from the last grave when the Cheyenne hunting party returned with a fair-sized bison calf. There came a moment of tension, and they made it clear they expected Delia Olsen, as the only woman in camp, to dress out the animal and prepare it for cooking. Smoke stepped into the breach.
She is a white woman, but she knows nothing on how to properly clean a carcass. It'll take her forever. If you want to eat it before it spoils, have 2 of your apprentice warriors skin and cut it up.
They thought that over a while and decided it might just be a good idea. Boys too young to join on the hunt often worked with their mothers at the preparation of the meat, which taught them the techniques needed. Spotted Feather selected 2 lads about 13 years of age and assigned them to the task. They looked unhappy about it, but they did a satisfactory job. Meanwhile, the other warriors built a fairly large fire for such open country and added wood to it periodically to produce a deep bed of coals. When only a few tiny blue flames flickered over the glowing orange mass, the hump and ribs went onto grilling racks taken from the gang's improvised chuck wagon. In no time, fat from the hump began to drip and flare up on the embers. That released a delicious aroma that riled the camp. Delia Olsen came to Smoke Jensen.
Smoke, what did you tell them to get them to stop insisting I deal with that small beast?
I suggested that white people did not know the medicine of the bison, and it might spoil the meat if you were to touch it in an uncooked condition.
And they believed that?
Yes.
That's outrageous, though close to the truth. I could have easily pierced the entrails and contaminated the meat. Sven always did the butchering for our family.
Then nothing was harmed.
Tommy tells me you're going to Muddy Gap. When do you plan to leave?
After the herd is delivered.
Would you... I know it's a lot to ask, but would you allow us to accompany you?
I'll I'll be traveling fast. I'll be taking Luke and the men he brought with me. They have something else to tend to. I don't see any way you can keep up.
We know no one north of here, nor in Sheridan for that matter. Could you at least let us come with you as far as Buffalo? I have a shirt-tail relative there.
We'll see how fast the herd moves.
After she departed, Ironclaw came next.
You are going to need help moving all these ponies, old friend. Some of my younger warriors, and of course the boys, are excellent herdsmen. They will go with you.
Smoke visualized what that would be like. A herd of remounts driven to an army post on a Crow reservation by 7 white men and probably 4 times that number of Cheyennes. It beggared description. At last, he clapped Ironclaw on the shoulder.
Sally will never believe this, Ironclaw.
Only an isolated summer thunderstorm delayed the 40-mile journey to Fort Custer, and then by only half a day. The Olsons kept up and didn't complain. Colonel Abernathy, newly appointed to command at the post, accepted the herd only after cursory inspection. His face registered cordiality, though his eyes betrayed his apprehension at the presence of so many technically hostile Cheyenne at the fort.
You've made good time, although we did expect you some 3 days ago. Your explanation of the reason is quite satisfactory, and please accept my condolences over the loss of your men. The remounts are in excellent shape. Here is a draft on the government department of the Army. For the agreed amount, Mr. Jensen. You may present it for payment at any major bank that has accounts with the government.
In Denver?
Yes, certainly. The First Mining and Milling handles our payroll, as a matter of fact.
Fine, then. I wish you good luck, Colonel. Those men who came out here with you look mighty green.
They are. Never fear, my Sergeant Major will whip them in line in no time. Now, may I offer you the hospitality of the post for the night?
No, thank you. We have urgent matters south of here. Every hour is important.
Well, I can appreciate that. The man you have as a prisoner, he looks dangerous.
Believe me, he is. He and his gang nearly took your remounts from us.
Oh, my word.
Yes. And now, if I have anything to say about it, he has a date with the hangman.
Along about 10 miles outside of Buffalo, Smoke Jensen learned that the shirt-tail relative of Delia Olson was a stern, uncompromising brother-in-law.
He's never really accepted me. Bjorn believed that Sven married below his station. What did it matter that we loved one another? He was the older brother and expected Sven to do his bid.
Then the chances of a warm welcome are...
None. But I have nowhere else to go. And the children are his brothers.
I've known my share of proud, stubborn men. My bet would be that it wouldn't count for much with this Bjorn.
So then, what?
How does Muddy Gap sound to you? There are people there beholden to me. I can put in a good word better there than in Buffalo.
Oh, Smoke, I don't know what to say. I've been such a burden. I would never be able to thank you enough.
Already have. Your cooking has kept my hand's spirits high. Tommy's become a good friend. It'll be my pleasure to extract some gratitude out of the good folks of Muddy Gap.
Well, now I can hardly wait to get there.
Smoke cut his eyes to the bound figure of Reno Jim Urey.
Nor can I. I want to get this lizard behind bars and scoop up his partner in crime. Then we'll go recover your cattle. The sale of them will give you a nice little stake, I'm sure.
On the main street of Muddy Gap, which much to Smoke's surprise had been renamed Jensen Avenue, as proclaimed by newly painted and displayed signs, the small band of travelers split up. At Smoke's suggestion, the hands went to the Sorry Place Saloon. The free lunch would provide them with food they had not tasted in a while. Delia Olson and her children went to the hotel to take rooms for the interim. Smoke, accompanied by the bound Reno Jim, headed to the jail. There, he dismounted and dragged Reno Jim Urien from the back of the outlaw's horse. Smoke Frog marched him up the steps and into the sheriff's office. Marshal Grover Larson looked up with surprise and pleasure on his face.
Marshal, this is the man who murdered a rancher named Olson and rustled his cattle. He also took a number of other beefs, and he's the one who stole my herd for a while. There are 6 men, all that are left of his gang, out at Bent Rock Canyon. My men and I are going after them when I've rounded up his partner.
Why, that's Reno Jim Urien. He's a former gambler who's turned to ranching, quite prosperous, too. He does a lot of business with Deacon Kelso.
I'll bet he does.
Smoke shoved Urien into a chair.
Now, he has a story to tell you, Marshal.
When Reno Jim Urien concluded his tale of robbery, rustling, and murder, prompted by the efforts of Smoke Jensen, of course, Marshal Larson sat staring at the man as though witnessing for the first time the presence on Earth of one of the imps of Satan. A sweating Jim Urien cut his eyes from Grover Larson to Smoke Jensen.
Now, I've done what you asked, and I said what you wanted me to say. Now, am I free to go?
Nope. For starters, what you did to this town is enough to get you an appointment with the gallows. Then there's Sven Olson. Oh, I knew him all right. A fine man. Horse thieving and cattle rustling are hanging offenses. So's murder of express agents and shotgun guards. No, Reno, it looks like you'll swing for certain shore.
But you promised.
Yes, I did. That only applies to what you did to me and my men. I don't speak for Money Gap or for the territorial attorney.
You can't get away with this. It isn't fair. I'll beat this easy. I got money, power, influence.
Right now, it looks like all you have is a trap door in your future. Now, Marshal, let's go get his partner.
And who's that? He didn't say.
It's Boyne Kelso.
I'll be damned. I'm with you, Smoke.
A highly agitated Slick Kilmer, one of the 6 men Reno Jim Urien had left to tend the cattle in Bent Rock Canyon, stood with hat in hand now before the desk of Boyne Kelso.
That's right, Mr. Kelso. I saw him with my own eyes. I was in for supplies and a little red eye for the boys when they come riding into town. Smoke Jensen, big as life, and he had the boss as a prisoner. They went direct to the marshal's office.
You could not have made a mistake?
No, sir. I told you just what I saw. If I had more fellas to back me up, I'd have braced them right then.
You keep saying them, Kilmer. Why is that?
Jensen had some rough-looking drovers along with him, though they carried themselves like gunfighters.
How many?
Oh, 6 altogether. And there was a family along, a woman and 3 young'uns, a boy half-growed and 2 little girls.
Where did the family go?
I don't know. I reckon to the General Mercantile. They had a wagon with them. Funny thing. It looked just like the one the boys took with them when they went after them horses.
Think, man. Where is that woman and those kids?
Well, they could have gone to the hotel.
Go to the trail side. You know Butch and Docking and Unger? Tell them I want them to come here. There's work for them to do.
What makes you think they'll drop everything and come to do your bidding?
Oh, you idiot. I own the trail side. They worked for me.
You do? Why, you're a deacon in the church. Ain't you Christian folk against liquor and women?
Well, there's some in our flock that take such things seriously, yes. I don't happen to be one of them. Now, do as I say. We have to find a way to get Reno out of that jail and finish Smoke Jensen.
Smoke Jensen and the marshal went directly to the office of Boyne Kelso. On the way up the outside stairs on the bank building, Smoke gave terse instructions.
Cover me from the upper landing. I'll go in after Kelso alone.
He may have help in there.
From what you tell me of that office, there can't be more men in there than I can handle.
It is small.
At the top, Marshal Larson took a position that let him see in through the glass pane in the door and cover the alley as well. Smoke put his hand on the knob, turned it, and went through into the hall. He unlimbered his .45 Colt as he stepped over the threshold. No resistance met him. 5 long strides brought him to the frosted glass panel in the door to Kelso's office. Here, he stood to the side, reached over, and freed the latch. Smoke Jensen bent low and entered in a rush, his peacemaker leading the way. He saw the bulk of a man hunched behind the desk. The Colt Frontier in the man's hands slid across the floor. Smoke crossed to him. Large exit wounds made ugly blossoms on the man's back. Smoke rolled him over.
Who are you? What are you doing in Kelso's office?
Art! Unger! The boss put me here to stop you.
Don't look like you did that.
No, but it's too late for you anyway. Mr. Kelso and a couple of the boys has got that woman friend of yours and their brats. He's aiming to make a trade.
What's that?
Them for him and Reno Jim going free.
That'll never happen.
Then they're dead meat. And so are you if you go after them.
Where are they? Where did Kelso take them?
That's for you to find out.
When Delia Olson found two men standing outside the door to her room, she didn't know what to think. One of them touched the brim of his hat politely and then removed it.
Mrs. Olson?
Yes, I'm she.
Smoke Jensen wants to see you and your youngins right away. We're to bring you to him.
Why, whatever for? Don't tell me he's found us a place to stay already.
Oh, I don't know, ma'am. Only that he said to come at once. We'll show you the way.
Come on, children. We have to meet Smoke.
When they turned into a saloon, Delia had immediate misgivings. By then, it was too late. The two men fell back and blocked the doorway. Ahead of her, at the bar, stood a man she had not seen before. He wore the clothing of a prosperous businessman, and a satisfied smile that could almost be called a smirk.
Welcome to the trailside, dear Mrs. Olson.
What? Where's Smoke Jensen?
No doubt searching my office for me about now.
You're Boyne Kelso!
Oh, it's a true pity that our Mr. Jensen has chosen to confide so much in you. I was afraid that might be the case. Whatever, you are to be my ace in the hole. You and the three jokers.
I'll thank you to explain yourself in a manner that makes sense.
I have a friend, a business associate, who is currently languishing in the jail. Mr. Jensen put him there. I intend not to suffer the same fate. In fact, I expect to be trading you and your offspring for his release and our continued freedom. Is that clear enough?
Smoke Jensen will track you down no matter how far you go.
Not if he's residing on that hill above town.
You can't get away with that. The law will have you in an instant, rest assured.
The law in this town is an old man and a green deputy. With Smoke Jensen out of the way, they would do well to successfully swat a fly. Tie them up and put them over at that table.
The trail side.
Smoke Jensen came out onto the landing.
Right, I heard the shots. Who is it?
Was. Someone named Art Unger. Kelso has Delia Olson and her children. He intends to trade them for Reno and his freedom.
He and Larson turned on Jensen Avenue and started for the trail side. Smoke motioned across the street.
Over there, where you can cover the whole front.
Marshal Larson was relearning things he had forgotten about being a lawman. He knew at once what Smoke had in mind. From across the way, he could cover the entire front of the saloon while Smoke went through the bat wings. For a moment, Grover wondered why Smoke had not chosen for him to go in by two entrances at once, catch those inside in a crossfire. But then it came to him. First, the Olsons were inside. And second, Smoke had no idea exactly how many gunmen Kelso had in the bar room. He crossed the street. When the marshal reached the right position, Smoke cut to the center of the street. He strode to a position directly in front of the open door to the trail side. He faced the liquor emporium and crossed arms over his chest.
Boyne Kelso, I know you're in there, and I know what you have in mind. Why don't you come out here and face me like a man?
You can go to hell, Smoke Jensen.
What? Are you going to hide behind a woman's skirt, Kelso? Do you expect those children to protect you from what I'm going to do to you?
How'd you like it if I killed them one at a time and threw them out to you?
And do you have any idea what would happen to you after the last one got used up? Have you ever seen what the Cheyenne do to someone who has deliberately harmed their women and children? Well, I'll tell you. They find themselves a bee tree and get some honey. Then they find an ant hill. Nice, big, red ants. Then they strip the ones who violated their families. Stake them out over that ant hill. Next comes the honey. They smear it in every body opening with a special lot around the eyes and the groin. Then they stand back and let the ants handle it for them. Sometimes they make jokes about the way the victim screams and writhes. That's what I'll do to you, you son of a bitch!
You'd never do that, Jensen. You're too law-abiding.
Don't try me, Kelso! Because I swear by the Almighty, I'll make an exception in your case!
That did it for Boyne Kelso. His nerve broken, he pointed to Slick Kilmer and Ham Dokken.
You two, take him. Do it now.
Mr. Kelso, I don't think...
You aren't paid to think. Now get over there and kill that bastard.
Look out, Smoke. There's two of them coming at you.
Shut up, woman.
Smoke Jensen threw with his usual blinded speed and put a bullet precisely 3 inches to either side of the door jamb. Shards of wood protruded from Slick's left arm. The slug had missed. When Kelso blinked, it had all happened so fast. Enraged, he drew a nickel-plated .38 Smith & Wesson from his shoulder rig and took a step toward the huddled Olsons.
I warned you, Jensen. I'm gonna start with the little girl.
No, you won't.
All at once, Smoke Jensen stood in the doorway, a .45 Colt in his rock-hard fist.
Hey, ugly!
Huh? Oh, ha, ha.
Smoke directed his attention to Kelso.
You have a gun. Use it.
Oh, no! I'm not going to try to take you, Jensen.
Use it, you gutless piece of dung!
Driven by mindless terror, Kelso swung back toward the Olsons and raised the Smith.
I'll kill them all! I swear it! Oh.
Without a word, Smoke Jensen stepped over to the Olsons, freed them from their chairs, and escorted them to the door. Outside, he took note of the crowd for the first time. Among them, he spotted Jenny Parkins. Gasping, she rushed to his side.
Oh, I received your gift, and I used it! Oh, I shot Brandon Kelso in the knee with it. He and his loutish companions tried to compromise me. It has profoundly changed me. I have a different view of the use of force. Violence, I now believe, is sometimes necessary to the preservation of order and for self-protection. I've grown up some, Smoke, and for that, I'm grateful to you. You saved my life again, it seems.
Then Delia Olsen took center stage.
Smoke, we're going to stay in Muddy Gap. Somehow I think your coming to our rescue is all the recommendation we'll need.
Well then, it looks as though I'm leaving the town in good hands.
Traveling alone, except for the burden of sorrow over the loss of so many good men, some who had been close friends, Smoke Jensen reached the Sugarloaf in only 5 days. His dark mood lifted when he saw Sally's raven hair bent over the kitchen sink. Before he could even dismount, she sensed his presence and hurried out on the porch, wiping her hands on her apron.
Oh, Smoke, it's so good you're back.
You've no idea how good it is for me. I've missed you, Sally.
It's good you're home. I see you planned your arrival to be in time for noon dinner.
I surely did. I've been dreaming of one of your pies since I left Muddy Gap.
Her initial joy passed as Sally noted the air of sadness about her man. Then she looked beyond him, to where the returning hand should have been near the corral.
Did you ride on ahead? Where are the others?
They're gone, Sally. Killed by rustlers. Let's go inside now. Tell you all about it.
Seated at the kitchen table, coffee mug in hand, Smoke related to his beloved Sally the ordeal he and his friends had undergone since they had left the Sugarloaf. When he concluded, Sally brushed a tear from the corner of one eye and cleared her throat.
They're at peace now. Oh, Smoke, I'm so sorry.
By then, the working hands had ridden into the ranch yard. all but one headed for the hot meal awaiting them. Bobby Jensen, who had seen Smoke Jensen's horse at the tie rail, broke from the rest and raced for the main house. He burst through the kitchen door and threw himself at Smoke.
You're home! I just knew you'd be here today.
Did you?
Were you gonna take me along the next time?
Suddenly, Smoke's thoughts rebounded to Tommy Olsen. He reflected on how that boy, only a year older than Bobby, had become a man in the crucible of their shared hardship. He wanted so much that such suffering would never visit Bobby. Then, the lad was growing up. He held Bobby out at arm's length.
Bobby, it is sometimes wise to be careful what one wishes for. You might just get it. As to going with me, not the next time. I think when you turn 14 will be soon enough. We'll go find us an adventure then.
Sally Jensen joined her husband and adopted son then and embraced both her men. Smoke was home and wise as always. And all was well in her world. Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man 17, Ordeal of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1998, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with the Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Karen Carbone, Elizabeth Jernigan, Laura Quinn Anderson, Nanette Savard, Tim Getten, Joe Brack, Tony Penny, Ken Jackson, Andy Clements, Terrence Asel, David Coyne, Eric Mesner, Michael Glenn, James Konachek, Christopher Graybill, and Dylan Lynch. Adapted and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Dwayne Beeman and Richard Rowe. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers. Original music composed and performed by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. If you enjoyed Ordeal of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series, all available from Graphic Audio and Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio titles. We appreciate it.
I am Sakage, a Lord of Shadows. I claim the shadows that the shadow may not. I am the strong arm of deliverance. I am Shadow Strider. All the pieces will be put into play. I am the scales of justice. I am he who guards unseen. I am Shadow Slayer. I am nameless. A new darkness will rise. My way is hard, but I serve unbroken. I will do justice and love mercy. The final battle will threaten all the world. Until the king returns, I shall not lay my burden down. And only Kyler can stand in the way of the Krull.
No way to win except to raise these monsters. It will be an orgy of death.
Then let us raise monsters.
The end is nigh. Find out where all the pieces fall in Beyond the Shadows, Parts 1 and 2. Available in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.